Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Portland, if you've ever wondered where to get your Blazers, Ducks, and Bees, it's right here on the airwaves of 1080. 1080 The Fan with Danny and Dusty. It's Danny and Dusty and Rust from noon till 3.
Hour number 3 on a Schultzy and Will edition of Danny and Dusty here on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan, 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, YouTube, Twitch, all over the place for everybody to find us all over the world. Happy New Year out there, everybody. The last day of 2024. Will working hard, doing double duty, hitting all the buttons, doing the co-hosting. Looks like the new year just hit in South Africa. I believe Lisbon, South Africa. What city was I just looking at? Cape Town, South Africa. Just had the midnight hour pass there. So happy New Year.
Good for them.
In South Africa.
They we are known to be big in South Africa.
10 hours away. Yeah, 1080.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
I'm not saying that anybody's listening to us in South Africa. I'm just saying that, like, hey, this part of the world just let the new year in, and we are not far behind. And actually, a lot of people here on the West Coast, I believe 1080 The Fan's own Brandon Sprague included in that, likes to celebrate the East Coast New Year, which I understand. It's easy. 9 p.m.
Hold on. Is celebrating the East Coast New Year like the old's way of being like, now I can go to bed?
Yes.
The guys celebrate exactly what New it is. Year's, but really, they just want to go to bed at 10 o'clock. That seems. This is like the guy who, I have 3 days in one. My one day, your normal one day is actually 3 days for me, and now I'm ahead of you. That's what this sounds like. This sounds like, I don't want to stay up. I'm going to watch the ball drop on, you know, the 9 o'clock hour, and then I'm going to bed.
How do they do that on the East Coast? Do they just, I think it's like 6 hours ahead in London. So do they like go like, okay, so it's 6 or 7 o'clock there, Happy New Year, and then they go to bed at like 6 or 7? I don't understand how that works.
I don't
works.
Know what they do. I think you just go to bed. Just admit that you don't want to stay up. Like, it's fine. You're like, if you're old, that's okay. Like, who cares?
Or if you have to work a 10-hour day today like I did, it's really hard to go out. And
that's fine, man. Like, or you got little kids, man. That's fine. That's fine. Stay home. But don't be like, I do Eastern time New Year. Like, no, you don't. You just go to bed at your normal time. It's fine. It's okay. You watched Ryan Seacrest a couple hours earlier than I did. It's okay.
I was saying this on Dirt and Sprague this morning. There aren't any good options for viewing for TV going to the midnight hour anymore. It's like the Dick Clark rocking New Year's Eve show with Ryan Seacrest, which I hate watching, and now it's like Andy Cohen with Anderson Cooper on CNN. I don't know who's doing anything besides that. I saw like some, it was literally like a half-wit production on CBS last year. They did something live from Vegas, except they really didn't, because they would like intersperse weird recorded like sets of people playing music with just firework shots from around the world. It was stupid. And I'm like, really? This is all we've got? Nobody is programming any good New Year's television? No?
I don't know that I have watched New Year's television in like years, other than the ball itself.
Well, you don't need to. It's not that great.
You know, like,
all the idiots hosting really aren't that great either. So,
well, I mean, there's no point. Although Gronk spiking Steve Harvey's Lego of himself is, that's an all-time classic clip.
Agreed.
That's
agreed.
Fantastic. I just, most of the time, like, I'm going out, or, like, even if I'm not out, like, I'm at someone else's house, I can't tell you the last time that I watched, other than, like, the final 10 seconds of the ball dropping. And that's because everyone stops what they're doing immediately, and they're like, hold on, we gotta watch it drop.
Everybody! And then, have you ever been in, like, a big room where half the crowd is counting ahead of the other? So you don't really know when you hit New Year? That's
always
fun, too.
I like to
boo. Like, ah, you idiots! You're too early! All right, what's one sports tradition or rule you'd like to see change in 2025? That's coming up here in a few minutes. Get your answers in for that. Will and I have a couple of things to sound off on about possible, hopeful rule changes in the world of sports in the next year. But we got to get into our college football playoff quarterfinal predictions. There are four games on the schedule. One, of course, tonight. So excited that we see a New Year's Eve matchup for the college football playoff, along with three, count them, three all-day college football playoff games. That's the best thing about New Year's. You could go out, party tonight, see a little bit of this Penn State-Boise State matchup, roll out of bed feeling maybe slightly hungover tomorrow, and then still just sit on your couch and watch all three games. So, Will, we got to try and come up with a prediction for each of these four. We'll start off with the first one, and we're actually going to do the Rose Bowl last. We'll hold Oregon, Ohio State until the final pick, but we'll start off with the Fiesta Bowl, of course, number six, Penn State taking on third-seeded Boise State tonight at 4:30, just a couple of hours from now. Penn State entering 12-2. Of course, they've got a great offense that we saw really explode against Oregon in the Big Ten Championship. We saw them basically doing the same thing in the first round of the college football playoff. Drew Aller's great, accumulated over 3,000 passing yards this season, and the Nittany Lions have a good defense as well. They've allowed just about 16 points per game. It puts them 12th nationally. Boise State has been good, Will, but, you know, Ashton Jante is about it, and if he can't run the ball, or if that's literally the only thing that they're going to be able to do against Penn State, I don't see it going too well for them. I'm going to say Boise State covers the 10.5-point spread, but it's going to be still a pretty big win for Penn State, 34-24 over Boise State. What's your prediction?
I think that there are very few defenses in the country that can stop Ashton Jante. The problem is Penn State's one of them. I would expect Penn State to load the box, and I expect them to get after that Boise State offensive line. I expect them to leave their corners on an island because they don't respect Maddox Madsen, and they don't respect the wide receivers of Boise State. I think that Penn State rolls in this game. I think that they cover the 11-point spread. I think I got them at 11.5.
Okay. It's been moving.
It was like 11 at one point today. It was 10.5 in some books. Then all of a sudden, now it's back up to 12.
Oh, geez.
I also wouldn't be shocked if you saw the under. I got it at 52. I wouldn't be. I know it's now closer to like 53, 54.
Again, 54.5 and a 12.5-point spread.
I think that Boise State, they just don't have the guys to compete. The only way they win this game is multiple turnovers from Aller and Ashton Jante goes off. I don't think it happens.
Yeah, Penn State's just deeper. They can control the line of scrimmage. They can sustain drives more with all that talent. Yeah, might be close early, but I do think Boise State will lose, but they will still cover the spread. All right, on to the Peach Bowl. That is tomorrow morning, your first game of the day. It is the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl at 10 a.m. on ESPN between number four Arizona State and the fifth-seeded Texas Longhorns. Texas, of course, coming in with an 11-2 record. They've had an up-and-down offense, I would say good at times. Quinn Ewers has been able to throw the ball, but then when they need a little bit of a rushing attack at the quarterback position, they'll go to Arch Manning. So inconsistent, but still pretty powerful when they're on. They've got a good rushing attack, even without Arch Manning in at quarterback. Their defense has been good as well, especially against the run. They got one of the best run defenses in the nation. Arizona also coming in at 11-2. This is a toughie. The spread here on this one is 12.5 as well. Same spread that Penn State v. Boise State is up to right now. The total over-under is 51.5. If you had to ask me, I like Arizona State. I like Scataboo, but darn, I just don't think that they've got enough to compete with Texas. I think Texas beats them by two touchdowns. I say like 35-21.
I have Texas covering in this. I got it at 13.5. I think that Texas has too many dudes. I think they're going to be able to run the football in Arizona State's defense. They're an average defense at best. I love the story of Arizona State. I love the program that Coach Dillingham is building. I love their quarterback, Sam Levitt, local kid. I think that the sky is the limit. You're just seeing the beginning of his growth. Cam Scataboo is one of the more fun players in college football to watch. They're running into a juggernaut right now. They're running into a Texas team where if they had a little bit better quarterback play, they might be undefeated just like Oregon. They have a strong defense, and I think they're going to be able to get into the backfield. They're going to get hits on Levitt. They're going to get hits in the backfield on Scadaboo. And then I think offensively, they're just going to run the football. They ran the ball all over Clemson, and that's a better defense than what Arizona State has. I like Texas to win, and that upsets me because I do want Cinderella to go on a little bit of a run.
I hear that. I really, you know what? I'm a Kenny Dillingham fan. I like the attitude that he's got and the support that he gives to his players. And, you know, Texas, unfortunately, they got two good receivers too, Worthy and Mitchell. They are two of the best wide receivers in the nation as well. Not tops like Ohio State's or Oregon's crew, but I would put them in the top five pair of wide receivers, hands down. All right, so we both think that Texas is going to handily beat Arizona State covering the spread. We'll save the Rose Bowl here for last, so skipping ahead to the Sugar Bowl. Of course, the Rose Bowl kicking off tomorrow at 2 p.m. You got the All-State Sugar Bowl at 5:45 tomorrow night, kicking off on ESPN between second-seeded Georgia and seventh-seeded Notre Dame. No Carson Beck, the big story here. Backup Gunnar Stockton going to be taking over. It's a huge drop-off at the quarterback position, but we know that Georgia's defense is so good, and they really spend a lot of time relying on the power run, and they're going to be leaning on their tight ends as well. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Gunnar Stockton turning into a little bit of like a check down Bo Nix. If he does throw, most likely just going to be looking to those short options first. I think it's going to be a competitive game, though. You know, Notre Dame, Riley Leonard have had a great season. They've used that loss early in the season to Northern Illinois as motivation, playing really well in their first college football playoff matchup. But I'm just not sure that they're going to be able to handle Georgia's elite front seven, Will. So I'm going to say this is a lower scoring one. Right now, Georgia favored by one with a total over-under of 45.5. I'm going to say Georgia beats Notre Dame, but it's close. It's like 23-20. So they still cover the spread technically, but it's going to be like a last-second field goal type of deal. But I say it will go Georgia's way, 23-20, my final score.
I think that Notre Dame's going to cover their right now, what, plus three, plus 2.5, depends on the book that you look at. I got them at plus three. I like Notre Dame to win this game.
I got minus one for UGA right now.
I have Notre Dame.
All right.
So I have Notre Dame covering. I have Notre Dame winning outright. I like what Notre Dame's defense has been able to do when it comes to stopping offenses. Aside from USC, they have really been able to shut down the passing attack of other teams. Now, they are going to be missing one of their top defensive ends in Mills. I still think that they are going to be able to get pressure on Stockton, load the box, give him multiple looks at the line of scrimmage, make it look like you're bringing the house, and then drop eight into coverage. Make it look like no one's coming. Confuse him.
Yeah.
And then bring a blitz, right? I expect multiple fire zones. I expect twists. I expect stunts. And then offensively, I expect Riley Leonard to run the football. His legs are going to be the difference in this game, whether Notre Dame wins or Georgia wins this football game. If he's able to run the ball and run the ball effectively, I like the Fighting Irish. I like them to cover. I like them to win.
Yeah, I guess Notre Dame could get the win by getting a lot of pressure on the backup, right? I think that's how they're going to have to do it, at least on the defensive side. Because you're right, Leonard's legs will win them the game on offense if you're Notre Dame. All right, finishing up with the ever-important Rose Bowl, the granddaddy of them all. It is presented by Prudential at 2 p.m. tomorrow. Kickoff on ESPN, but we've got all of the coverage starting right here on 1080 The Fan at 10 a.m. You got Ducks game day with Dirt and Anthony Newman hanging around until noon. Then you got the Ducks OSN pregame show. And then at 2 o'clock, you got the kickoff between Oregon, top-seeded in the college football playoff and undefeated, and number 8, Ohio State. Ohio State currently a 2.5-point favorite, 55.5 over-under total right now. Will, we spent some time previewing this game leading up to it. I don't want to dive too far into like Oregon's, you know, keys versus Ohio State's keys, other than to say that I think that this is going to be a high-scoring game for both teams because they are so good. Now, does that mean that since Jordan Burch is back, there might be a little bit better of a defensive effort from Oregon? Yes, but remember, we are dealing with the most talented receivers in the nation for Ohio State. They have a two-headed running back attack just like Oregon does over on the Buckeyes offense. And They seem to be confident in themselves. It pisses me off as a Ducks fan. It gives me bulletin board material if I'm a Ducks player, hearing that guys like Will Howard are saying that they still view themselves as undefeated because they shot themselves in the foot, or like Jeremiah Smith, for instance, saying, I don't even know why any Oregon defenders are covering me, man. Come on, guys. I'm too good for you. I get it. They're good, but I don't know if I'm talking with my bias here, but I think it's going to be a gritty, close matchup with Oregon coming out on top. I'm going to say Oregon 33, Ohio State 32, pretty much just like the game that already happened between them. I think it's going to come down to the final seconds, but there's going to be points scored by both teams to make it interesting the whole way.
How often do you get the best team in the country, or at least the number one team in the country, with the better quarterback in the matchup, and you get them plus points or plus money on the money line?
That's true.
How often does that truly happen?
I think the Chiefs were underdogs once this season, and they lost that week. So other than that, I don't know.
How often does it happen in college football?
It never.
Doesn't really happen, right? And so when you have an opportunity to grab a team like Oregon, plus points, plus money, I just kind of feel like you have to do it, unless you truly just dislike Oregon. And they won the matchup the first time that they went against each other. I think that Oregon is going to make enough plays to get it done in this game. I love the over in this game. They went over this point total by 10 points last time. Guess what? They left probably another 14 to 21 points combined on the table. It seems like when you have big-time college football matchups now, they always go over. Like in the early 2000s all the way up to about 2010, it seemed like they always went under because the best teams had the best defensive players. Now it feels like they have the best offensive players, and the totals always go over. I like Oregon to cover this game. I like Oregon to win this game. I think it's going to be close, and I think it's going to be a shootout.
I like that. It sounds like we're on the same page, except for the Notre Dame-Georgia game. I think Georgia's going to win that. You think Notre Dame's going to win that, and I think Georgia's going to win that with a last-second field goal. All right, those are our predictions for the quarterfinals of the college football playoff. We are now just under 24 hours away from Oregon kicking off against Ohio State. So, so excited. You can catch all that action here on 1080 The Fan starting at 10 a.m. tomorrow. All right, last day of the year here in 2024. If you could change a sports tradition or rule in 2025, what would it be? That's coming up next on a Schulte and Will edition of Danny and Dusty on 1080 The Fan. Happy New Year, everybody. Schulte and Will edition of Danny and Dusty here on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan. On the final day of 2024, talking sports resolutions, wishes for changes to your favorite sport or for your favorite team, or what tradition or rule would you like to see changed coming up in 2025? Will, I've got a couple of these and love to hear your thoughts on the Vancouver Ford text line as well, 503-864-6FAN. Or chime in on the YouTube chat. One, actually, I am super excited. This got fixed this year, so more so starting off with a thank you to college basketball for finally switching the rule to allow players to wear the number over 5. There was an archaic rule, Will, on the books forever, I believe since like the freaking 60s, that college basketball players were only allowed to wear digits 0 through 5. Because they were basically made easier with only 0 through 5 to signal to, like, the scorer at the half-court line during foul calls, or, you know, making calls as the referee to the officials on the side. And it's like, hold on a second. So you're telling me that because you don't think that these referees can count, or you're trying to keep it simple, or, you know, keep them from doing something that NBA referees do, you know, every night during 82 games of a season, like, what the hell are we talking about here? It is one of the stupidest rules, literally. Like, Bill Russell, I think, was the last player to wear a number over 5 in college basketball. Once again, that goes back to, like, the 50s, 60s. Yeah, yeah, Bill Russell wore number 6 for San Francisco between 1953 and 1966. Before the 57-58 season, the NCAA changed the rules and barred any jersey numbers between 6 and 9. And actually, at that time, Will, they couldn't wear jersey numbers 1 or 2 either. So it's nice to see college, like, actually loosening up a bit. We now see NIL. That is a thing. you know, money being paid to players above the table in college sports. Like to see that. They kind of just let those handcuffs go, and thankfully, college basketball fixed itself with the stupid archaic rule of not allowing any jersey number over 5. Now you can wear whatever the hell you want. So Bronny, if he wanted to go back to USC this year, he could have worn 6. So pretty cool. Not too shabby there. And
I don't know that I knew that was a rule.
I mean, I'm just happy that we don't have to bitch about it anymore. I cannot believe it, literally, from the 50s until now. What is that, 70 years? What are we doing?
I remember, like, in middle school basketball, that being a thing to make it easier on the referees. Oh, but
you can't count to 9.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't remember. It was like a hand thing. It was like,
yeah,
you could go 4-4.
Number
four.
Of digits, 4-4. Yeah, it's 44. It's 33. Or you could go 5-8, you know, 5-3 equals 8, or 5-4 equals 9. I was the king of the community.
Yeah, that kid. When I was a ref, it was that kid. That guy right there.
Just
long
pointing
hair.
At him.
That guy. He did the wrong thing. She did it. It was her. Right there.
We need more good referees in youth sports. I'll never forget when I was a kid, there was, and I'm assuming every, like, sports, like, league, you know, locally or middle school group of, like, basketball teams has this referee where they're way into their job, you know, almost too much into their job for, like, a referee of 10 to 15-year-old kids.
That was not me.
And they, you know, they do all the physical acting out of when a foul's called. They're very loud. It's like, oh, wow, okay. I almost miss youth sports just because of that. They're always characters. And we need more of those, frankly, because they actually cared. And it sounds like you as a referee just didn't care, Will.
I was there to collect a paycheck. I was Terrell Owens in Philadelphia at the end. I just made sure I showed up and you gave me my money.
Oh, man. Also, one other thing that I would like to see change as far as sports traditions go. I hate the wave. I might be in the minority on this. Let me know, 503-8646-FAN. But I cannot stand it, especially at an important part of the game or when the game hasn't, you know, been sold yet. Like, it's not obvious that the home team's going to win or lose. Well, some idiot in whatever section out in the outfield starts doing the wave, and then everybody else tries to copy them. It's like, oh my goodness, the human sheep that I live amongst, please stop doing this. It makes no sense. There's no reason to do it other than to, what, see everybody's arms moving, you know, up across the stadium? It's just a cool thing to look at? Like, whatever, I'm out on it. I don't need to see people doing the freaking wave. And stop thinking you're cool if you get everyone in your section to do the wave. We're sheep. That's what we are.
I don't really have an issue with the wave. I'm neutral. I don't like, nor do I dislike. I do like that in Chavez Ravine, they bring out the beach balls. I think that's funny. I like that as part of, like, a baseball experience. Baseball experiences where it's like, come try out our top-tier milkshake, or come try our top-tier whatever. Like, there's too many home games. There's too many games in general in baseball, so let's find different avenues to get people there. Totally okay with it. I think if I could change one rule, and it's hard because it feels like it's the only rule that does benefit the defense. If I could change the touchback rule in football, when you fumble it, it goes out the back of the end zone. Instead of it being a touchback, it
should be a safety.
No, because that's not fair either, because it isn't a safety. I think you make the change to where the fumble occurred, that's where the opposing team, the defense, gets the football. Because there needs to be a rule that goes towards the defense. Because every single rule now, it's all set up to benefit the offense. If I could change two things in the NFL, it would be the bad roughing the passer penalties, and it would be the touchback rule, where instead of it being a touchback, it was you get the ball as an offense in that spot. So if a player fumbles, like is jumping and reaching for the ball, it should be where they jumped. So if they jumped from the 3-yard line and they fumbled, you get the ball at the 3. Not where, like, if he fumbles it at, like, the 1.5.
Not where he landed.
Right.
Okay.
So I think it's an automatic turnover. I do want to change the roughing the passer penalties, though, because half of them just aren't roughing the passer penalties.
Yeah, it's like
you're
hands
just
to
landing
the face.
On people. The hands to the face, I get it. I get why you can't have a player launching themselves and using their head as a weapon into another player's head. I understand that. I do think that the landing on a player, like forcibly landing, what are you supposed to do? Yeah. If I hit you and I'm running forward and you're not moving, you're going to fall backwards, and you're going to fall backwards in the path of where I hit you. So why do I get punished for that?
Okay, that makes sense. One more quick college basketball thing. I want them to advance the ball when there are timeouts. If we're going to shorten the time, you know, of the shot clock, which they have, but like it's gone down from 35 to 30. And now whenever they miss a shot, they only get 20 seconds on the shot clock as opposed to the full 30. I think that changed last year as well. Just make it a little bit more like the NBA and move them down to the half court line after they call a freaking timeout. And don't allow the team that just scored to call a timeout in college basketball either. Can't stand that. Hate it. They do some super weird things in that. All right, looking at the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6FAN. I'd like to see defensive scores in football count as negative points for the opposing team, so a pick six would take points away from your opponent rather than add to your score. I like it, but at the same time, I'm not quite sure how that would work, Will. You'd obviously have to have a whole new way of, like, stats being tracked and generated, and, you know, just because you caught a touchdown doesn't necessarily mean that, like, those points are going to be guaranteed for your team, and if somebody, like, takes away a touchdown, does the touchdown that was scored then, like, get taken away points-wise, like, for fantasy players? Like, I do feel like there's some implications here that would have to be figured out, and some things would have to be talked about. I'm not sure that's the most realistic thing. I think if you're talking about, like, NFL scoring changing, I mean, personally, I've got a great idea for the NFL that I don't think it'll ever do, but if you got rid of kicking altogether,
you
want to
get rid of kicking?
Well, then you never, ever, ever have a game decided by a field goal or an extra point, win or loss.
Why shouldn't it be decided?
There are people on that side of things that say that they're not really playing any of the game except for when they come out to kick a field goal.
It's an important part of the game.
Is it really an important part of the game to reward a team that can't get as far down the field, though? Because that's kind of what I think about, like, okay, so football, got to get down the 100 yards to score. This just gives the team a buffer, you know, less points to score, but they can still score. They can put it up on the board, but it really ends up coming down to a kick, you know, a lot of times. I don't know the exact statistics on, like, a final touchdown versus a final kick deciding a game, but I don't like kickers deciding NFL games at all.
I don't. See, here's my thing, though. It's a part of the game. It's always been a part of the game. It's not, like, a weird part of the game. Kicking has always been important. If you worry about it coming down to a final kick, get a better kicker, or don't let the other team score, or you score more. Like, it seems to me, I like it. It's a part of the game. If you wanted to take it away at, like, a youth level, right? Like, at a youth level, there isn't a whole lot of kicking done until you're about high school, and even then it's shaky at best. Yeah, that's fine. I get it. I understand it. But I don't like punishing kickers for them taking advantage of a skill set that they have created. Like, they've earned it, right? Now,
well,
it might have been because they were trying to play soccer.
It's kind of jumped the shark. It's not soccer players anymore, Will. That was true. And actually, I remember you talking about this a couple weeks ago. Well, okay, it's soccer players, but it's more so any kid at the age of 12, 13, or 14, you know, if they don't think that they can focus on, like, the physical parts of a football game, oh, well, I can play this position, I can kick. And when you and I guess technically you're a little bit younger than me, when I was a kid, there were almost no coaches around, you know, to coach straight up, like, field goal kicking. Mm-hmm. Now there's camps all over the place. It has become this major skill set that, frankly, it's kind of competitive to get into, even as, like, a, you know, 11, 12, 13-year-old
good
kid. It is good, but it wasn't the way that it used to be. And I feel like we're getting to the point now where it's just too much talent at, you know, when you're hitting 50-yard, 60-yard field goals on the regular, yeah, eventually you're going to fall off like Justin Tucker. Eventually, like San Francisco 49ers kicker Moody having a bad year, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to have that perfection. But when you're good and when you're on, it just almost seems too easy to me. So that's my thing with kicking.
But I worry that this is more of an, like, they're too good, so we need to punish them for being good at their job. And that, I don't know that I can get behind that.
I hear that. I don't want to punish them, but I don't want teams to be able to go 16-0 by just kicking field goals, or 17-0 by doing that.
Yeah, but no one's done that.
Yet.
And they're a long way, and football coaches are a long way from doing that, right? I think that is a That's a non-issue that'll happen. I know we have to get to a break, yeah. but I did see on the Vancouver Forward text line, someone text in, go back to the old kickoff rules. I couldn't agree more. I can get behind the new kickoff rules at a middle school and a high school level. Those are children.
Yeah.
They have not, like, their parents are the ones that are telling them to play football. They're like, cool, I like Justin Jefferson, or I like Ja'Marr Chase. And they just show up and they play. They don't understand what a concussion is.
Yeah.
When you go and play college football, and you go and you play NFL football, you are making a conscious choice. You are making a conscious choice as an adult to go out and play a game. And when you go and you play that game, sometimes there are bad things that happen. We're watching the LSU-Baylor game right now.
Yeah.
There was a gruesome leg injury to one of the LSU linebackers. At minimum, he broke his leg. I'm pretty sure he dislocated his ankle, and they had to re-put it back in. You sign up and understand the risks when you play a football game. You understand the risks that you might get hurt. And a part of getting hurt is concussions. Now, that being said, I'm okay with the rule where you don't have a wedge, right? You don't have a wedge buster. I understand how you can add those elements into it and make the game safer.
Yeah.
But I still like the old school kickoff rules. I like them trying to return kicks. I like the surprise onside kick. It's a fun element of the game that seems to be taken away. There are ways to make the game safer without completely changing it, and I would like to go back to a safer-ish version of the original kickoff rule.
We'll take a look once again at a couple more sports traditions or rules that you'd like to see change in 2025, seeing a lot of great answers coming in on the Vancouver Forward text line and the YouTube chat, as well as examine the winners and losers in the world of sports in the past calendar year. That's all coming up next, but first, it's Will with SportsCenter. Schulte and Will edition of Danny and Dusty here on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan. We're talking about sports traditions or rules you'd like to see change in 2025. I did want to take a look at the sports winners and losers of the past year, but I'm not sure that we're going to have time to get to that. There's a lot of great answers coming in on both the YouTube and the Vancouver Forward text line about changes to sports that you root for. Love this one. Yes, Schulte, how about instead of goalposts, you have a 5x5 square that the quarterback has to throw the ball through, could get 3 points. Quarterback is the highest paid, means he's the most important. Now, that sounds a little video gamey, but I don't hate it. But I'm just not sure that something like that would work. But I like the concept, though, Will, of making it, you know, putting the onus on the highest paid player, putting the onus on the entity that the team, you know, thinks is the end all be all by giving them $50-60 million. Like, I don't see a negative by getting some kind of system to allow them to do that, but it just does seem a little more, it's like a mini game inside of a game. I'm not sure that works. It's like an NHL shootout or something.
I think I might be a traditionalist here and say, I like kicking. I would not like kicking to go away.
For sure.
If you want kicking to go away, get more first downs, get less fourth downs, have to punt less, get to fourth and two or one more and go for it. I don't know what to tell you. I like kicking.
Make kickoffs great again, says our next texter on the Vancouver Forward text line, 503-864-6FAN. In addition to the old rules, if the kickoff goes through the end zone in the air, and the receiving team gets it's a touchback, and the receiving team gets a point. So that would be similar to like the CFL Rouge rule. So Canadian football, they've got a 1-point Rouge, which I believe happens on when you kick a ball through the back of the end zone. You don't have to hit it through the uprights, but if it goes over the back of the end zone, that is technically a point. And I believe that happened earlier this season in the CFL. There was a game that was won by a Rouge point that was a ball basically not even kicked through the uprights, just through the back of the end zone, and that was that. So
I think that's how the Argonauts won a game.
Thank you. And so that right there kind of tells you, well, it may not necessarily be the best system for deciding winners and losers. That's a pretty easy kick to make, as we were talking about kickers that are getting better and better, but I don't know, Will, do you think like a 1-point Rouge would work at all in the NFL?
I could get behind if you are kicking the ball off and it goes through the uprights.
Okay.
Getting points there. So I could get behind that the being uprights. Three. Yeah.
Like See, if, I agree.
I could get behind that. Like if you have, you know, Justin Tucker and he comes down and he is able on a kickoff to kick the ball through the upright, I can get behind, they get 3 points, and then the other team gets the ball at 20, 25, wherever your touchback is. The reason I can get behind it is how often would that happen?
Yeah, it's a 75-yard field goal,
also,
not very often.
It's also impressive as you know what. You know, like, to have a kicker that can kick the ball that far and that accurately, it could also be a big game changer. I'm always in favor of putting more points on the board as opposed to finding ways to take points away.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I don't know that I would love negative points.
To my earlier point about numbers being changed for high school and college basketball players, as a high school clock keeper, it sucks having numbers over 5. It gets confusing after that with all the fingers being held up and trying to listen to the number that's called. I get it. I understand. But I just, unfortunately, I think that's kind of something that you have to deal with. Like, right? Like, it's a game of sport. Kids are wearing numbers, and you have to call what the numbers are.
As a person who his entire life wore 74, 75, 76, and 77,
mm-hmm.
I'm pro numbers over 5.
I mean, I always wore 11 or 12, so I never really would have had to deal with this. It was really easy for the numbers that I always wanted to pick, and they were available. So.
Yeah, well, when you're a big fat O-lineman, you only get a certain amount of numbers, and the 70s are it.
Oh, in my chubby days, I wore number 63. That is the Schultze family number right there. 63, baby. Let's see, what about penalties that are called in football that do not actually affect the play, have the yardage tallied up and applied on the ensuing kickoff or punt instead of a replay of that particular down? I like that. There are some situations where I do feel like a penalty, you know, kind of gives it to the other team unintentionally, you know, a little bit of a better situation, but I'm
How
not.
How would you determine it?
Yeah, exactly. Like what specifically determines whether or not it's added, you know, to the next play or added in, you just have to redo the play. That's a great question.
Because then you put it into like a judging situation. It's why I always will have like an issue with sports that are based in judges, right? Because you and I can judge something completely different. It's why I like baseball. It's why I like football. If you pass into the end zone, if you run with the ball in your hand through the end zone, it's 6 points.
Mm-hmm.
If you touch home plate in baseball, it's 1.
Ooh.
When it comes to sports, no offense, like right now I have Livy Dunn on my screen, gymnastics. Livy Dunn can go out and do a floor routine. I could look at it and go, that's perfect floor routine. That's a 6 or whatever the perfect floor routine is. Jordan, you could look at it and be like, well, her knee wasn't quite tucked enough. I didn't love her landing. So to me, it's actually a 5.5. I don't like that. I need pure defined scoring. If you get if you hit a backflip, that should be a point or whatever, right? It needs to be clear and determined. I don't like when you factor in judging into it. And that's what that rule would do.
Okay, I see that. And then last rule that I'll get to, I'd like to see them get rid of linemen downfield calls. I don't hate that, but I'm not sure that that would work. I feel like, Will, teams would be able to take way too much advantage of just having, you know, 6 linemen running downfield. There's really no defense at that point. You can't really track anybody. There's too many crosses being made, I would assume, right? There's just no possibility that you could actually have a game scoring like under 30 for either team if you got guys running out from the line. So I'd like the idea. It does seem to get called at the weirdest times, but not sure that one would work. All right, we got to wrap it up. We have a couple of daily degenerate picks to get to. Will and I do, and we'll wrap it up. Coming up next, Danny and Dusty are out. It's a Schultze and Will edition on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan. This Van Halen song, perfect for a concert, perfect for a strip club. I'm pretty sure I've heard many a dances to this song. And then Warrant's Cherry Pie follows it up. Schultze and Will here on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan, wrapping it up with a couple of daily degenerate picks before we hand the mic off to Isaac and Souk in a couple of minutes. So, like to do, if I did host a show every day, I would end every show with a lean of the day and lock of the day. So I want to give you one of those from each of us, Will and I. My lean of the day yesterday did not go so well. It was Blazers plus 6.5 versus Philly. I thought that they were going to score a bit more. They obviously could not shoot from the three-point line. Ended up really sucking off the bench, too. Their starters just played almost the whole game and turned the ball over a lot as well. So that did not hit. They got beat by like 22 or 23. My lean of the day today, it is going to be Boise State, Penn State under 54.5. And I'm going a little bit, Will, off of what you said about that score line moving. There are going to be some touchdowns from Boise State. I don't think it's going to be more than a couple. Ashton Janti will get into the end zone. Penn State's offense, pretty high flying. I love seeing Drew Aller, what he did against Oregon. So I do think that they're going to score some points, but even if it's like a 30-20 game, it's still the under. So I think under, that is my lean of the day, 54.5, Boise State, Penn State. What about you on your lean of the day, Will?
Well, I'm going to go the other way then. I'm going to grab Penn State at minus 11. I was basically going to go opposite of you because I have given out both of those plays as well. I like Penn State to just absolutely mollywop Boise State. It's no offense to Boise State. They don't have the dudes. If this defense of Penn State can stop Ashton Janti, this game's over. Maddox Madsen cannot win the game by himself.
And yeah, neither can Ashton Janti, frankly. So it's going to take some sort of special performance from Boise State on the defensive end to get it done. Maybe they can sack Drew Aller a little bit. That's literally going to be what it takes. All right, my lock of the day. It's going to be a little cheat, but come on. There's a college football playoff with three really great games to bet on tomorrow, so I got to take advantage. And I'm going a little biased here, but I think Oregon is going to cover the 2.5 versus Ohio State. I really love their offense. I love their ability to score, and I think it's going to be a pretty similar matchup on both sides of the ball and a pretty similar score to their 33-32 victory over Ohio State earlier this season. Will, what is your lock of the day?
Give me the over 54 in the Rose Bowl. I think that both teams left a lot of meat on the bone. If you ask them both, they both think that they left at least 10 points in the original matchup. And guess what? In the original matchup, they went over this point total at 54.5 by 9 freaking points.
Damn.
I think that they go over. It feels like all big-time college football games go over now.
I love it. I hope you all make some money off of our picks. That is going to do it for this episode of Danny and Dusty. Thank you so much again to Will Ordner for doing double duty. He handled all the heavy lifting. Made me sound great. Also co-hosted. I love it every time, brother. Coming up, it's 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Primetime with Isaac and Souk next here on 1080 The Fan. Happy New Year. Have a great Tuesday, everybody.